Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is Christoph Katzbeck.
Good morning, Jay.
How's it going?
It's good. How are you doing?
Well, I was doing okay, and then we talked about the World Cup game
last night. That was a big bummer.
That was so sad.
It really was. I was finally excited to get to watch the States play a game because, to my shame, I have not watched a ton of World Cup, even though I really enjoy soccer.
That is shameful.
So we were excited. Kids were all sitting down ready to watch it, and the States just did not look good last night.
I bought yesterday at Costco. They had one more of their, well, I shouldn't say, they had their U.S. soccer jerseys at Costco.
Yeah. Oh, you bought.
No. I mean, they're Costco prices, man. It was like their special edition kind of like Costco soccer jersey or whatever. And there was one that could remotely fit me.
Sure.
On a good day, it fits me. So I bought it and I thought, okay, well, Costco has a good return policy. So if this if this game doesn't go well, I decide, though, I'm keeping it anyway.
Yeah, we'll come back around in 4 years. It's all good.
Well, not only that, but Olympics and everything. I always feel like I try to break out the American gear during the Olympics and during the World Cup. I love it. But
listen, soccer jerseys look pretty cool too. Like you don't have to wear them. It was funny. Not to like throw him under the bus, but I'm going to. Yeah. JP, we love him. Came to our youth group Bible and Barbecue on Sunday night wearing a soccer jersey.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, you watching World Cup? You gonna watch something tonight? It's like, no, I got this at a garage sale. I don't care about soccer. Of course.
But he's still supporting the team.
But he looked good.
He looked good. Yeah. Well, you know, I think the jury's out on whether I look good. Maybe it was my red pants.
Red pants?
Oh, yeah.
You were like.
I was decked
out,
man.
You were going out.
Well, I'm all in on this.
You got to wear those pants the next time you
I went to the Olympics in 96 and they're in Atlanta.
Really?
I just graduated high school. Yeah,
okay.
My buddy and I. That's a whole story. I'll tell you off air. Sometime,
I'm surprised I haven't heard that one. Okay.
Oh man, it was great. And we would go to all these kind of off the beaten path sports like badminton, field hockey, table tennis. But then we tried to find the country that loved that sport. That's the cool thing about the Olympics is every sport has some country that's their sport,
right?
That they love.
Yeah, they're super.
And
stoked
so they get and they compete really well, and then they have strong fan base. So like, wouldn't shock you to know there's not a ton of American fans at badminton.
Which is a shame.
But like Indonesia and like some of the Asian countries they love badminton, and like field hockey was the Dutch, and team handball was the French, and so we would just try to find the country and sit with them.
Sure.
And most of them were very hospitable and were very welcoming, or whatever. But
that's awesome.
We would go to baseball, and then we're just full on,
just American full American
gear.
Mode.
But
yeah,
it just those kinds of events are just fun because it brings the rest of the world kind of to one space, and so it just, I don't know, it makes for a unique environment. Being in Atlanta during the Olympics was a very unique experience.
It's cool. I would say with the World Cup this year, what's been neat has been how much it feels like the States have kind of embraced it. It feels like, I don't know, there's been an excitement.
They did in 94, too. You were just too young to know.
That was the last time it was in, wow, 94.
That was 94. Okay. That was a big deal. Nobody knew what soccer was there.
No, man, I would have been six years old.
Yeah, people, well, and I barely knew at that point.
And we were a Chicago household, so at that time, it was all Bulls.
Oh, yeah. You didn't even know there was another sport.
No, had no idea.
The Bears didn't even, nobody knew the Bears existed during that time.
You could say my dad was helping guard my heart.
Interesting.
In terms of
that's nicely done. Jeff never tries to transition.
I got you.
Okay. So, guarding your heart from temptation and keeping your heart with vigilance.
Yes. Yeah.
There you go.
Proverbs 4. I'll confess that I listened to your whole sermon on Sunday, but I had gotten really badly sunburnt. On the 4th of July. And so my attention, I re-listened to your sermon this morning because I had listened to it on Sunday.
It's such an odd start to that sentence.
And I realized,
I have to apologize. I listened to your whole sermon.
Twice.
Apology accepted.
Twice. Because it was just one of those,
still not
I don't know, have you ever gotten so sunburnt that it messes with you mentally?
No.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Do you sunburn?
No.
Oh, well, that's why. You're not pasty white like no. I am. I spent 3 hours on the Peshtigo River on the 4th. And so I was listening to the sermon, I thought back to it. And I was like, oh, man, what did Jay preach on? And then I went back and listened to it again, and I was really thankful to go back and listen to it again because, this whole idea, and we talk a lot about this, of guarding your heart of desires is just is so important to the Christian walk, and I think sometimes we miss it. We miss the struggle. You had mentioned really early on in the sermon, and what I would like to maybe just pick your brain a little bit on it first is this idea of at one juncture we're called to guard our heart, right? So the idea of guard your heart. There's something very specific about guarding your heart, but at the same junction there is the heart is above all deceitful. In the wrestling through desires, because I think depending on where you've come from in church backgrounds, you can hear the word desire and you can go, I got to run away from all those desires. Or you could hear the word desire and go, I got to pursue all those desires. How are you wrestling with those two? I think both are healthy in proper context, right? Not the extreme version of it. How do we not fall into the ditch of all desires are awful or all desires are good? How do we wrestle through that? Does that make sense, that question?
Yeah, it does. So this is definitely core to a lot of my understanding as it's developed over the years and growth and spiritual formation is realizing. So for a long time, I just thought desires are bad. So so my Christian walk ended up looking like a form of Buddhism, where you just want to detach from wanting anything. That's the secret. As though Paul said in Philippians 4, I've learned the secret of all things to being content. Don't want anything. But he doesn't say that.
No.
And Jesus, if you listen to him preach about the kingdom, he's certainly not deadening their desires. His aim isn't be detached from wanting anything and then you won't be disappointed, because that is a way of dealing with things. That's like I said, that's a Buddhist way of saying, if I don't want anything, I'll never be disappointed. I'll never get angry because I won't be passionate about anything. Like I'm just just whatever happens will happen. But that is a pretty dull way to live life. That doesn't really feel like abundant life. That feels like a life that's just trying to avoid pain. And it doesn't really work. And so we end up being in a situation where you're trying to balance those out. So I'm like, I'm going to try to not want anything. And then when I really do want something, then I'll figure out how to kind of spin that. And when I realized that actually desire is at the core of the kingdom, like that's the whole motivation behind wanting to follow Jesus, is to have our desires redeemed. That was pretty transformative to me. And so then my aim started becoming, well, I want what Jesus wants. I want to train my desire. So like my brain just goes in this, again, I've said this before, that I have a very spreadsheet brain and almost like a flow chart brain, and a very kind of like, well, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. So if what Jesus is offering is abundant life, and if I want that, then whatever then I want to want the things that he says that will lead to that. Like if I don't want the end thing, like the treasure in a field, if I want that, then I'm willing to give up anything to get it. And then I believe that the desires that he has are good. So what he's offering me is good in the end, like the full, but also then how he tells me to get there and wanting all of the things that he wants in my day-to-day life is also what is abundant life. Like that's the thing that I want. And so for example, I know we use it a lot, but if you want to get in shape, everybody wants to be healthy. I don't know anybody who says, I want to be unhealthy. But part of getting healthy is then it's all the millions of micro decisions and saying, well, I want the healthy option for dinner rather than the junk food. I want to exercise rather than sit around. So the big thing that you want, when I realize like, well, if you really want the big thing, then I want to also want all the small things that lead to the big thing. So I want to get healthy. Well, I know that the way that I'm going to do that is by retraining my palate and my body to realize, well, then that means I want to exercise and I want to eat healthy. And over time, training myself in those ways starts to make it so it's no longer much of an effort. I've mentioned before that people that I know who work out a lot, I mean, you do this, you work out a lot. I'm sure that when you go a few days without working out, you're like, oh my gosh, I feel awful. I just got to get a workout in. Yep. And I'll be at seminary or whatever. There are guys like that. There's like, I got to get a run in. And that's never crossed my mind. Like, I've never thought, oh gosh, I got to get a run in. Well, why is that? Because you've trained your body to desire that. That's actually what you want. Does that make sense? So you want the big thing, but then that means you got to train your heart to want the smaller things that lead to the big thing that you say you want.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up. I'm gonna run down that just because I run down that trail just a little bit and hopefully circle it back just because it is kind of a secondary passion of mine. For a long time, even now, there's in the fitness world, there's been a lot of debate on the question, is obesity a choice? And part of the reason for that is if you talk to anybody who wrestles with their weight, they're probably going to tell you, like, no, I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel unhealthy. I don't want everything that comes with being unhealthy. And yet you'll have people who are on the opposite end, the kind of the fitness people who will go, well, it is a choice because you've made all these choices that get to that. And what you're describing is kind of the more important thing to focus in on is it's not the grand overall either goals or finishing the race or however you want to think about it. It's, you know, sure, maybe obesity isn't the choice, but what you had for lunch is a choice. You know, what you, moving a certain way or doing a certain exercise, that is a choice, whether you do that. In the same way with the Christian walk, it's all the small, and you were talking about this, it's all the small things that we do and think of. And I loved in your sermon, you talked about how it's especially during the, it's not during the extreme seasons of the peaks or the valleys. It's the, I hate to say the word mundane, as if any day is mundane, but it is in the every single day, you know, in the weekly rhythm, you know, Tuesday morning, you're waking up, getting the kids ready for school, getting ready for work, whatever it looks like. What does your walk with Jesus look like in those moments? Not necessarily, what does your walk with Jesus look like Sunday morning while you're at church, or when you go away to a men's or a women's retreat, or when you, it's the faithful, what is the classic Eugene Peterson, is the long obedience in the same direction, you know? And to kind of like warp that all the way back to desires is as we are faithfully walking in that, we see our desires shape and change and mold around it. In the same way you talked about the if I miss exercising, like I feel it, because I have over the last 6 years developed a normal routine of I'm working out usually 5-6 days a week, and that's just my routine. And so I crave it, and if I miss it, I feel awful. In the same way, walking with Jesus, you know, if you have rhythms baked into your life of, we hammer a lot against your Christian walk is not just boiled down to did I do my devotional in the morning and do my prayers, but if you're in the regular rhythm of doing that, when you miss it, you feel it. You're like, I'm like, man, my mornings have just been like, I feel funky. I feel out of place. I feel spiritually misaligned. I don't know if I want to say it that way, but yeah. So anyways, I just to kind of affirm all of that, like, I think that is so important. And so it's like, we miss that in kind of like the quote unquote normal moments of life.
Yeah. Cause that's where the training happens. I've used this example a million times with community. Because we're counseling people and dealing with hard things. And often people feel like they don't have any community. They want community, but they don't want to do the small, they don't want the small things that lead to community. And I think that we end up, it's because it feels helpless. Like, you feel helpless, it feels hopeless. If you're overweight, making a choice to eat a salad instead of a cheeseburger for lunch doesn't seem like it's doing anything. Like it's not going to, that's that in and of itself is not going to change anything. So then you feel like, well, what's the point? But buying into the idea that this is why we always want to hammer on being faithful in the small things, because those things stack on top of each other. And that is, that shows what we really want. And so if you really want community, then you also need to, then you need to train your heart to want the small things that lead to that. So it matters that you say yes to going and connecting with people. It matters that you connect with people at church or as we do greenhouses, that you are a part of those things with regularity and consistency, sometimes with people that you don't hit it off with perfectly at first. Then the that once you start training yourself to say like, no, that is what I want. I want to want that because I want community. Then over time, that's what you will end up having. And so I, and you made the point too, you know, talking about like, is obesity a choice, which that kind of runs into all kinds of sensitive areas for people. I think part of our problem is that idea that we take away people's agency in that. And we think like, well, I could never be in that kind of shape. Well, that may be partly true. So like it's this, you know, double-edged sword a little bit. Like on one hand, yeah, there are all kinds of different body types. There's all kinds of different, you know, there's things I could practice basketball every day and I'm not going to be as good as Michael Jordan. I'm not going to be as good as, you know, Giannis. Like it's not going to happen, but I could be a lot better than I am right now. And so understanding, okay, God, you created me. And so where am I supposed to develop? And then I don't want to compare myself to other people. The question is, for example, am I physically healthy? Am I being a good steward of my body? Relative to like what you've made me to be, you know, like Sometimes people have different health issues that keep them from being like, I'm not going to be an ultra marathon runner at 48 years old. I don't want to be. And right. I don't even think that would define health. And so we need to stop comparing ourselves that way, but also not lose our agency and say, well, then like, it doesn't matter. Like, no, my choices do matter. I can be healthy compared to like what I was yesterday. I can be healthier than I was yesterday.
Yeah. I love the example of community. So one of the things I've said, just with like training, but then to kind of connect it with community, is that we tend to overestimate what we can do in a day and underestimate what we can do in a year. And what it means by that is, yeah, we tend to overestimate. And so we just kind of like put all of our energy into doing this one thing. It doesn't produce what we want it to. And then we just ditch it and run away, right? Versus being faithful in the small things over the course of a long period of time and seeing how that's used. Community is a great example because, you know, we feel this desire to be connected with other people because that's the way we have been created. We have been created to be in community. And so it's important. That's why we talk about it all the time. So what happens is maybe somebody gets like really like convicted by that. And so they're like, I'm going to invite somebody over for dinner. And, you know, they make the invite. They get really, really excited about it. And the person says, we're not coming over. Or maybe the person does come over and you have dinner together and it's like awkward conversation and it goes terribly. And you're like, I am never doing that again. Community is the worst. Never doing that again. Versus, you know, one of the things that we say frequently, and I just like, I have grown to appreciate it so much, is if you spend 15 minutes before or after church service just talking with somebody that you're sitting next to, maybe not even 10, 15 minutes, but you make an effort to say every single Sunday that I'm here, I'm going to make an effort to connect with at least one person and build that relationship and just have 10, 15 minute conversations. That builds over the course of time. And then all of a sudden what's happening is you've built that relationship, hopefully over the course of time, to where it naturally leads to, hey, what are you doing tonight? Let's have dinner. Or, you know, we underestimate the stacking of just being faithful in those small things over the course of time. My encouragement to people is just, don't underestimate those small, those small moments and those small things. One of the things that was really challenging for me when Sarah and I first even moved here was when we had young kids. And just being in, I know this is the case for people who are kind of like a little bit younger life stage than us, but kind of the same areas. Like you have like, an infant, and it's really hard to do church when you have a young kid. And my encouragement to them is, stop looking at church as just like, I missed the sermon, and so it's not worth it for me to go. Instead, look at it as, this is me connecting with God's people. This is me worshiping the Lord. And yes, it's difficult. But you have opportunities to connect with other people in ways that you're going to miss if you're just going to like, well, I'll watch the sermon online or I'll listen to the podcast. And I saw that with our family, and I saw, man, what a blessing it was to, there were Sundays where I completely missed the sermon because I was helping with one of my kids or whatever. But there was an opportunity for relationships to grow. There was an opportunity to continue to worship the Lord. There was something that God was teaching me in that moment. It's funny because you could have been preaching the best sermon on patience ever. But what the Lord wanted to teach me about patience in that moment was directly connected to me caring for, my son who was, not having it. Or I remember mornings where I got thrown up on by one of the kids, stuff like that. Those small things add up.
Yeah, and that's where vigilance comes in. So it says, keep your heart or guard your heart with vigilance. Mm. That's believing that those small moments matter, believing that it, you don't want to let a little bit in. And we sometimes, so that can be perverted into a way that where it becomes a crushing weight and legalism and then shame. That's not the aim of that at all. But it is to say, man, it matters. Like each moment matters. Knowing then that we're going to fail at times, and we'll miss, we'll eat the spiritual junk food. We won't spend time in prayer. But that whole idea that people underestimate what can be accomplished in a year. I mean, I've thought about, we've mentioned this before when we preached on it. I don't know when it was a while back. On the Lord's Prayer. And we talked about it during the spiritual disciplines. But if you, so many people say they want their prayer life to develop. And so then we always think of like, okay, what's the big thing that I need to do that will radically change it? And so tomorrow, all of a sudden, I will just be this incredible prayer warrior. Well, that would be like me saying, I want to be a triathlete and expecting there's something I can do, some class I can sign up for, something I can do that by next Tuesday, I'm ready for a triathlon.
Or you're like, tomorrow I'm going to go run 50 miles.
Yeah.
And you start to do it and you torch your hamstrings.
Yeah,
like,
it's
2 miles
awful.
In.
Like I think hamstrings would be the least of my concerns at this point. But like I would say that if you pray the Lord's Prayer every day, for a year, your prayer life would be radically changed. And there'll be people who grew up in a tradition where they prayed it all the time and just went through the motions. Well, yeah, like you can do anything. Like I can go to the gym and go through the motions of, lifting just the bar and just being like, I did it. Well, you didn't really do it. I didn't really like participate in it. I just went through the motions. And that's kind of what that certainly can be turned into that, but that doesn't mean it doesn't mean that it's not valuable. It just means we need to engage in it. But if you just did that, if you just read the Bible 5 minutes a day and did that for a year, stop trying to figure out how you're going to memorize Deuteronomy and how you're going to read through the Bible five different times, and I'm going to learn Greek this year. And like, I just hear people say all kinds of things and I'm just going, how about you just start with 5 minutes a day. Now, on the other side, people get into a rut. So starting, then growing means consistently challenging, right? So if I'm gonna bench press and I start out just lifting the bar because that's all I can lift, that's fine. But if in 5 years I'm still only lifting the bar and I'm like, look how easy this is. It's so easy. Like, well, I'm not actually growing at all. Like
right,
there is a
right.
level of, hey, there's going to be increasing challenges here, But that's how you're going, that's how you're going to grow. And so that whole guarding your heart with vigilance, I really wanted to hammer that home of, this is why it matters. It matters to keep yourself far from sin, for example. And a lot of us grew up, a lot of people grew up in a culture where there'd be misinterpretations of, you know, avoid evil in all its forms, or in every form it appears, or every appearance of evil, depending on the translation, which matters a lot. And so that led to people being like, well, I can't go to a movie because there are rated R movies being played there. And so what if somebody sees me there and it appears that I'm participating in evil? And we create all these legalistic laws. And I think in the pushback against that, we went into the other ditch and said, you know, like, it doesn't matter. It's actually become kind of cool in certain Christian circles to like play with sin a little bit. Like, look how free I am in Christ. I can dabble in these sins. And it's like, look, if you care about the condition of your heart, then you'll keep it with vigilance. You'll want to run from sin, and you'll want to run towards Christ. And you can do that any moment. Like, what matters is right now, where am I running towards? What do I want? And that's what I would want people, like, when you're keeping your heart with vigilance, like, really pay attention to what you desire. I would say pay attention more to what you desire, and then acting in accordance with what the desires you want to build, then you're just worried about the things you're doing or not doing, if that makes sense. So here's what I mean by that. Worry less about, oh, like, I haven't been to church for a while, than whether you want to be at church, and then what you're going to do next Sunday about that desire, and to train yourself to want the smaller thing that leads to the bigger thing. Because what happens is the enemy uses shame. And so you say, well, I haven't been to church in a month. Our instinct immediately is, I got to make up for that. All right, I'm going to go for the next year, not miss a Sunday. Okay, well, what happens next Sunday? Like, so you're shaming yourself into that, which doesn't work. And then you go for a couple Sundays, and then you miss a Sunday. Well, what happened? You failed. Well, what's the point now?
Right.
There's no point.
Right.
The more you can guard your heart and ask yourself, like, what do I actually want here? And what are my desires? And are they being formed more and more? Think about if you started going to church, you recommitted yourself and you're coming to church every week. Think about the difference between, okay, so you miss a Sunday, between that feeling the shame of, oh, I messed up my streak. Like, I didn't, you know, what's the point? Versus praising God that your desire, that you missed it. Not just missed it by not being there, but you missed being there.
Like,
you're
there
sad.
there was a in your
yes.
heart,
yep.
a visceral reaction of, oh, I'm bummed.
I'm bummed that I
yeah.
missed that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For whatever reason, maybe you chose to sleep in, and when you got done, like, then you woke up and it's 10 o'clock, and you're like, I'm sad I made that choice. That's a victory.
Yeah.
And then, because that means your heart is starting to want that. You're starting to become the person that says, man, I just need to go for a run. I'm bummed that I missed out on yeah. that. Versus when you miss out on something you didn't want to go do, like, then the real issue is, well, you didn't want to do it, not the behavior in it. And Jesus is always after our hearts. So we need to keep that with vigilance.
Yeah. It's the, I always give the, I give the comparison of shame versus conviction to students when I'm explaining what it's like to confront your sin and what it's like to have sin kind of exposed. And the question is, when you are exposed to your sin, when there is something where you're like, oh, that was not good, what does it draw you towards? Because if it's shame, you're going to keep drawing yourself towards darkness. You're going to try to hide that. You're going to cover it. You're going to just kind of like shove it off to the side and try to ignore it. If you're feeling conviction, that's going to draw you back to the Lord. And the neat thing about that, when you're feeling that, so using the example of the person sleeping in and then being bummed, is that, yeah, you missed the thing. And yeah, maybe that was probably the quote unquote wrong thing. However, if what the Lord is doing in that moment is sanctifying you, is showing you the redeeming work inside of Him, of helping you turn from whatever it is you need to turn from and turning back towards Him, like you said, that's a victory. That's a great thing. And so conviction, that's the Spirit working inside you. It's an affirmation of the work God has done within you, which is awesome and praiseworthy. And that's the point of the, that's, we get so caught up in like the things, you know, the things of like, it, you know, you, I, man, you've mentioned this a couple of times of just like, sitting on the couch, missing your date with Jesus, or what was I can't remember how you specifically.
The person said that it was that they were trained or taught about having a quiet time, being like, well, if you missed your quiet time this morning, you left Jesus sitting on the couch.
Yeah,
you had a date with Jesus, and you left him just sitting there on the couch.
Yeah, yeah. Just in that image is like, oh my goodness,
it's so terrible.
It's terrible, and it's like that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is God is constantly drawing us back to him. That is constantly just the story of God redeeming his people, is him drawing us back to him, abiding in him, living in him. And so if he's taking this, like, yeah, it's, you can call it what it is. It's not a good thing when we sin, when we do something that's quote unquote wrong, but it's the Lord's work of redeeming it that is beautiful. And that is the work that he is doing in you. And like you said, that is a praiseworthy thing. I always think when you talk about keeping the heart, I love the imagery in Ezekiel of the heart of stone being turned into a heart of flesh. You know, that's the imagery we're given of when we are saved, God takes our heart of stone. It's a heart that no longer is pumping blood to the body. It's no longer giving life to the body. He takes it, he gives it a heart of flesh that's able to pump blood, life throughout the body. That is what he is doing to you. And so the question then is like, what is it that gives us life through our body? We have many examples throughout scripture that say like, you know, the fruit of the Spirit, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, self-control. We look at the different things in Philippians that Paul talks about that we should be thinking about and that should be just kind of washing over our minds. And it's like, that's the lifeblood of the Christian. So when you're confronted with these different things where maybe you feel like you're not guarding your heart, if it's turning you back towards him, it's doing that work in you. And that is a good thing. So,
yeah. It's so difficult with the whole idea of sin and trying to guard your heart from sin and being vigilant and rejecting it, because we fall into the ditch of shame and then we fall into the ditch of minimizing. And so the only way we can think of in our human brains to not feel shame is to make the sin seem not that bad.
Right.
So, I mean, that's, and we just, our language goes there. We just default to that. The way we tell, for example, when a friend lets you down or something, well, how do we try to make them feel better about it? It's not that big of a deal. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Now, it might not be that big of a deal. That might be the accurate thing, that it's not a big deal. But sometimes it is a big deal. And our sin, our rebellion against God is a big deal. Like, that's a huge part of this whole thing, is that sin is insidious. It is a poison. It will grow. You can't, you got to kill it. You know, like this idea of killing the sin, being ruthless with it, not wanting it to fester at all. I think that we don't, it comes back to not us never really fully being able to understand grace.
You know, what do you mean by that? Yeah.
Well, when Paul talks about in Romans 6, and he's talking about how this grace abounds, and it's like where sin exists, like where sin increases, grace abounds all the more. And then they say, like, well, should we go on sinning so that grace may abound? And he said, by no means.
Right.
What do you have to do with sin? Like, you are made for life now. You're made for righteousness. Like, you don't have anything to do with sin. And that's the tension of it, is like understanding my sin is darker than I could ever imagine. Like the fact that it's not that I didn't, you know, leaving Jesus on the couch, the reason why that's a terrible thing to say and to go through is because it's using guilt and shame as a motivator. It's painting Jesus as this jilted friend who, you know, poor Jesus sitting there on the, I mean, there's all kinds of bad things about that. But what it's trying to get at is like, it matters that you didn't pay attention. Like, it's like, be mindful of your heart. Pay attention to what's going on. What do doctors try to tell you about noticing either cancer or heart issues? Or pay attention. don't dismiss a little lump when you see a lump that's somewhere that you're like, I don't remember that being there. Don't dismiss, like, pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention when your heart starts, like, if you've got chest pains or something like that, pay attention to it. Don't dismiss it. And so that's what I would love for people to get at is, man, when you want things that are of Christ, that's a beautiful thing. And that's what our, that's the goal. The aim is that you would desire the things of Christ. Because when you desire the things of Christ, then the like obedience to Christ follows from that. Because like I said, in John 6, when they said, where else are we going to go? You have the words of eternal life. We believe you. We believe that you are the Son of God. So, but when you don't want those things, pay attention to that. Pay attention to why I don't want to be with God's people. Why? I mean, you know, in youth ministry, you know, we see this all the time that you see the warning signs of a kid kind of falling away long before they do.
Yeah.
They start missing getting together like at youth group or whatever. And there could be reasons. Oh yeah, I've got practice or I've got whatever. Well, then you know that those reasons start to become a little like
a little more choicey.
Yes,
like it's
right.
Not a,
a little like, yeah, well I got, yeah, you know, I just had a lot of homework, which means I had one worksheet that I had to do and I got home at 5:30 and so it felt like it was, you know, whatever. Yeah. And when that happens, like I never have those battles with people. When people tell me I wasn't at church, I was too busy, I never make any judgment about that because all I care about is their heart.
Right.
All I care about is, look, the reality is either you really wanted to be here, but you couldn't. And then I want to like grieve with you. That's sad that you couldn't be where you wanted to be, where it was going to be life-giving for you, or you don't actually want to be here. And all I'm doing by like, if I'm pushing into that is firming you up in your excuse and the narrative in your head that, oh, I couldn't be there. I couldn't do that thing. I mean, again, you hear it with working out or with quiet times or with anything that requires any kind of discipline at all or any kind of belief that because I want the bigger thing, then I want to train my heart to do the smaller thing. And so I don't want us to in reaction to a culture that shames and guilts in order to combat sin, I don't want us to push back against that by minimizing sin. I want to push back on that by letting grace abound, that our hearts might want more of that. Because a person who desires more and more grace isn't going to sin more and more. I think that's a big part of Paul's point. He's like, if what you really want is more grace, you're not going to pursue sin. You're going to pursue Christ. And so that it doesn't make sense to say, well, then if I keep sinning, then I'll have more grace. Like, no, if what you want is more grace, you want to pursue Jesus, which is going to lead you away from sin. You're not going to want to do those things anymore. You're going to want new things. So again, the big thing is pay attention to that and be ruthless. So what does that look like? Well, when I realize I didn't want to do this thing, like stop making excuses, basically. Like if I don't get up in the morning to read the Bible, I don't need anybody else. Like I know, did I oversleep or did I just choose? Did I choose to sleep longer? Did I choose to take longer to get rid? Whatever. But the aim is like, we're not on trial and we're not being hit with shame. Like what if it's simply Jesus saying, hey, I'm just showing you your heart right now.
Yeah. A little more honesty with ourselves and with others.
Yes. And then receiving God's grace.
Absolutely.
Because when we're honest with ourselves, we're afraid of that because then we're like, well, then we just assume that what's coming for us is shame. But no, it's actually grace.
Yeah.
And it's Jesus just pointing that out and saying, yeah, I'm every bit as much as like a doctor who pushes on your abdomen to see if, it is a sharp pain. He's not doing it to shame you. He's doing it to say, hey, we need to discover this so that we know what's going on here, because you want to be healthy. I want you to be healthy. You want to be healthy. And what Jesus is saying, I want you to abide in me. I want to abide in you. And so I'm going to show you, we're going to reveal some of these things, and let's just be honest about it, and then we'll let's deal with it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's, it's so necessary. And the tie-in to, you know, it goes all the way back to what we said from the very beginning of just like processing through our desires and thinking about what we're desiring, what we want to desire, what we're not desiring, and then having a vision maybe of what we would want to desire and pursuing that, you know? And so if you are taking an honest inventory of your life and you're going, yeah, I'm not desiring walking with the Lord. I'm not desiring, you know, practicing the presence of God being with me. Okay, well, why? You know, you gave that example of the student who started missing youth group, you know, and if they miss youth group because they're like, well, I just, you want to be whatever, you know, youth group. But if all of a sudden you're like, okay, but why are you missing out on the opportunity to hear God's word? Why are you missing out on the opportunity to gather with other peers who love Jesus and connect with them? That's kind of the bigger thing. And that's the question of like, are you desiring walking with other believers in your walk with Jesus? Are you desiring growing in your walk, receiving? And if not, then okay, then you can begin the work. You know, it's like the doctor poking the abdomen. Okay, we've kind of poked and we found what the desire is. And we can begin to be honest with God and just go, Lord, I want to desire you. You know, we Sunday night for Bible and barbecue with the youth, we read Psalm 63, it says, you know, in a dry and weary land where there is no water, I have come to you, the sanctuary. I desire you, and it just paints this picture of somebody who is so parched from just like being in this dry land. And ultimately, we want to be at a point where we recognize, like, yeah, that's us. We need, and the only like true solution to that is Jesus. Anything else is just kind of an illusion. So, what does it look like to desire that and pursue that?
I mean, no. Just when you're thinking about that being thirsty, I think most people have had the experience of being really thirsty, like hot and thirsty, and something other than water sounds the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Coke or whatever, where you're just like, but the reality is that water is still, no matter what studies are going to come out about electrolytes and salt and whatever, but like, turns out
water is king.
Water
yeah.
still is king. And so that's part of our issue, is when we're thirsty, we don't even know what will actually quench our thirst, and training ourselves to, it's like one thing I know, I remember this as a kid, my parents used to say like, drink a big glass of water and then you can have whatever you want.
And usually,
at the very minimum, I might have sipped on a Pepsi or something like that. But, you know, as opposed to when you're just so thirsty and you just like slam something that's not, you know, or you're hungry. And so you eat a bunch of junk food or whatever, as opposed to just have some protein and, you know, or do something that'll fill like your stomach a little bit. But regardless, it's the idea that we do this a lot with rest. We're so tired. And so then we just want to rest, but we need to check our hearts on that. Like, why is it that I feel like social media, like scrolling on my phone, is going to be rest? Like, I just need to take inventory of that. Like, stop defending it. Stop saying that it's like, well, what's, you know, I'm just chilling on my phone or whatever. No, like, you're not. You're building a narrative in your mind that this is restful, but every study shows that is not restful. It's the opposite. How many people say that they don't sleep well, and yet people are on screens until late at night? They're like, you know why you're not sleeping well. You're buying a lie because you're letting yourself be formed in this other narrative rather than just being honest about it. Like, I think that, you know, I've heard that a lot, even about Sunday mornings, when people say, just think about, sometimes people will say, well, Sunday's my only morning to sleep in. Okay. I mean, like, then be honest about what you want in that moment. This isn't about church attendance, but it's about your what you believe is restful, what you believe is actually the good life and what's abundant life. You are showing, you're demonstrating what you actually want. The most dangerous thing is that you lie to yourself. It's way better. I mean, imagine that, like, this is why Jesus, I think, often lets the crowds walk away. He knows, and why Paul even talks about church discipline of turning people over for the destruction of their flesh, that their soul may be saved. It's this idea that, like, let people experience, like, this is what you want. I'm not going to convince you. It's not loving of Jesus to try to convince somebody who is demonstrating that they don't treasure the kingdom above all things, to try to convince them that they're okay. Like, how awful would that be? Imagine a doctor who convinces a patient that they're fine, even when they're not doing the treatments that they're supposed to be doing and the cancer is continuing to grow in them. That's not loving. Like, let people experience that. And so if you are in a place where you say, you know, say, well, Sunday is my only morning to sleep in. Okay, well, then you need to just be honest about that. Or, like, you know, we're at the cabin every weekend or whatever. This is the thing, man. I just don't care about attendance at all. Like, anybody that's around me much knows, like, I don't care about numbers. I don't care about attendance. I don't care about, like, any of those things. What I care about are people's hearts and their desire. And I know what it looks like when somebody really values something. We all know that.
Yep.
I mean, think about, like, when I was coaching youth sports, I know what it looks like when someone values youth sports or doesn't value youth sports. Now, I was always like, well, it's youth sports. I'm glad when families go on vacations and miss games or whatever. But you know, like, you, it doesn't take long to realize when you're coaching, like, what families value. Some families value sports above all things. And so they're just like, their kid is going to be there no matter what. They're coming back early from vacation. They're doing whatever. And then other families are like, clearly they value their time together more than they value sports. And I would say that's a good valuing. Mm-hmm. But nobody would look at it and say that that's not the case. It would be a very obvious thing that if a family says, yeah, well, we're going on vacation. And if I said, oh, so you think your family's vacation is more important than this little league game? And they would say, yes. Okay. Correct. I agree with you. Yeah. But also, that is what you're saying. Like, nowhere else in our lives do we do that, except for, it seems like, with God. With God, we have all kinds of excuses as to why. And all I want people to hear is the answer to that excuse is not shaming, and that's not what I'm trying to do. It's probably why I'm going around a little bit on it, because I just, it stresses me to think that it doesn't matter what I say, people are going to hear through the lens and the narrative that they have grown up in.
Yeah.
So I can say all day long, like, this isn't about shame. Like, this is just about, God is just exposing our hearts in that, and people will still walk away being like, oh, so if I don't go to church, I'm not a real Christian. I don't know what to tell you about that. What I do know is that Jesus says his true disciples are willing to give up anything to follow him. And following him doesn't mean perfect church attendance, but it does mean, like, a desire to be with God's people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you prioritize what you value, and it's just a way of, you know, we talk about it all the time. We talk about fruit to root. It's a way of going, you know, what we're prioritizing is a reflection upon what we value within our hearts
and what we believe, which, by the way, the reverse is also true.
Yeah.
You can go to attend church every Sunday, but that could be what you value. What you value is your attendance and not Jesus.
Yeah. You value an event. You value, you know,
why attendance doesn't matter. Like, some people come to church because they're bored.
Right.
They just like, some people are hyper extroverts and they haven't been doing anything and they just say, they got to get out. And they would go to anything. They would literally go to anything. They come to church.
Right.
Like, and that's fine. I'm happy they're here. I'm happy for them to hear the gospel. I'm happy for them to be around believers, whatever. But my point is, like, that's why it comes back to, we have to be willing to be honest with our own hearts. We have to have people in community who also desire those things. Like, one thing a whole section I cut out was on friendship. Mm. And, you know, because I already preached on friendship, but the idea that you, you want to be around people. We tend to seek out people who sin at the level we want to sin at.
Okay. Okay.
So this is why it would have been, I was like, this is going to take too long.
Yeah, you're going to have to, you know.
We find a kindred spirit. We talk about like a kindred spirit or people who see things the same way. We like people who see the same things the same way as us in all things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just conversation flows easier.
We gravitate towards hegemony.
Yes. Like, we gravitate towards people who see things the same way we see them. Well, since we know we are all infected by sin and we all have a posture towards defending and deflecting and denying and self-justifying, then logically we're going to seek out the people who also see those sins in the same way as we do and who will also defend and justify. Case in point. People who gossip like to have friends who gossip. If gossip is a struggle for you, you do not want to be around a person who doesn't gossip.
Correct.
It makes you feel awful. Like you'll even be like, oh, they think, so sometimes it'll come out this way. I don't like that person because they think they're better than me. They may very well have never said anything like that at all. It's you that feels that way because what you are responding to is they are not participating in the sin that you think is okay. And vice versa, that'll happen. So it happens with, you know, the shows we watch, the things we do, like everything. We like to be around people who aren't, like when we call it like, well, I don't want to be around people who are being judgmental. And I've shared this example before that I had a couple of friends in college that I would always accuse of being judgmental. But in hindsight, they weren't being judgmental at all. They were just living a holier life than me. Mm. And it convicted me. So I would talk about how legalistic they were because they got up early to spend time with God.
How dare they?
Yeah. And I remember one of them one time saying like, why do you feel judged? I don't judge you at all for this. And I had to face the reality of, no, that's me. Mm. I feel that way because I'm looking at what you're doing and I feel guilty. Now, sometimes like that's where the comparison game is tough, but the idea is, you want to be around people who challenge you to walk with Jesus more closely. By all means, avoid judgmental people, avoid legalistic people. It's in the extent of like following them or being shaped by them. That's not the point. But the point is that if we're going to be in godly community, we have to expect it's going to push on us a little bit, and we'll push on them because there will be things that God has given you a lot of grace in that should be making someone else feel uncomfortable because they're like, oh, you know what? I should think more deeply about that. Maybe I shouldn't, you know, and there will be things for different people that like for one it's sin and for another it's not. Like that's a reality too. And then you learn how to have grace with one another and be like, yeah, I get it. You don't feel the freedom to do that. That's something that God has called you not to do, but I'm okay with doing that. And that's an honest response to that. This is why it's so much gray area, and we want to make everything black and white. It's so much easier to just say, here are the things you shouldn't do, here are the things you should do, and as long as you can justify it or spin it in a way so it fits under this, you're good. And like, that's not the way that it is. So
no.
So hang out with people who are going to challenge you to follow Jesus more closely.
Yeah, amen. I love that. I'm glad maybe it was cut on Sunday. It would have been great to have that, but we got it here on the podcast. I love it.
I'm so glad we did. All right. Well, we should probably wrap this up.
I think so.
All right. Well, if you need some help in that, like walking through those things, reach out. You can email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or give us a call. We always are trying to just walk with people and help. Like we're all in this battle together. We're a battle against sin and keeping our hearts, but also just in a lot of freedom in Christ's grace for us and the joy of who he is making us, being sure, assured that he is forming us into who he says he's forming us into. And that's a beautiful gift. So we hope this has been helpful. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.